And we're back. And yes, as promised, we have Alexander Brown on the line to talk about the proposed nuclear base for Port Kembla in Wollongong, which is, of course, the subject of opposition from the community and from residents. So thanks very much, Alexander, for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you're at the moment talking to me, Ari, and we've got Sue as well on the line. So we'll start off with, could you give us maybe a bit of a background of the politics on particularly why Port Kembla has been shortlisted as a potential site for a nuclear base?
Sure. Well, about it, a year ago, Scott Morrison made this mysterious announcement that they were considering three East Coast locations for an East Coast base for the new nuclear submarine program under the AUKUS agreement. Mm. Those were Brisbane, Newcastle and Port Kembla. Now, it's very unclear, really, what the answer is to your question, because those sites, none of them appear immediately suitable and all have various problems. Port Kembla was specifically ruled out as a possible submarine base under an earlier defence review before the AUKUS program was announced. So the exact reasons behind the politics of why Port Kembla appeared on that list have never been clear to anyone. Speculation might include that it's a fairly safe Labor seat and maybe they were planting, some sort of political game there. There are certain advantages from their perspective, being a big steel producing town. As a university, there's an industrial base here, so whether there's some connection to that, and the idea of expanding the defence industrial base locally seems to be popular among certain business interests. Mm. So perhaps there was some sort of pull factor there. The local Regional Development Australia Illawarra group, which is a Commonwealth-funded regional development body, had actually been advocating for something like this for some time. So, yeah, there seems to be some pull factors from business, maybe certain defence interests around down at Nowra, which is an hour south of Wollongong, as a major defence base, Albatross. So whether it's connected to that. But, yeah, it's been really unclear to us why Port Kembla. Obviously, it's a major city. We've got a couple of 100,000 people in the Wollongong LGA, and then there's two neighbouring LGAs that make up the Illawarra, total population about 400,000. Mm. You don't cite a dangerous, potentially hazardous nuclear base, and then, of course, added onto that the potential for it to become a target in any conflict in the middle of a major built-up city.
No, you wouldn't think so. It is a bit odd, certainly. So I guess from there, like, what can you tell us about the campaign that's developed in opposition to the nuclear base? And I think I forgot to specifically introduce that you are from an anti-war group called Wollongong Against War and Nukes, WAWAN, which is a great acronym. So, but what could you tell us about the campaign and the what kind of layers of community have gotten involved and spoken out against the base?
Okay, so I guess I'll take it back, if we've got a little bit of time, to the AUKUS announcement and some local radicals, myself included, started organising. We have a small group, Gong Commune, and we put together a sort of discussion night about what AUKUS meant and the potential for the potential for war that it represents. Because I certainly see it as a warmongering exercise, among many other things.
Yeah.
So that was sort of a starting point for myself and some of the people who later formed WAWAN. Then a few months later, so early, I think it was February or March last year, Morrison actually named Port Kembla, and then a few local groups. So the local student association first called a demonstration National Wollongong University Student Association, Undergraduate Student Association, in town, and suddenly, you know, at very short notice, you had at that demonstration local union leaders, specifically the Maritime Union of Australia's Southern New South Wales branch secretary, and the South Coast Labor Council, the secretary of the South Coast Labor Council spoke. A couple of the local Greens councillors spoke out against it. And then, local socialists, myself, and others. Now, Wollongong has a very long history of peace activism and anti-nuclear activism. So that then fed into a motion by one of the Greens councillors to renew the city's long-standing commitment to being a nuclear-free zone. And we had a quite substantial demonstration, about 100 people outside the council chambers, where that motion passed unanimously. Perhaps it wasn't unanimously, but it was fully supported by the majority of councillors. That demonstration was a good sort of kickoff. We've tried to basically build links with the existing peace movement, which has been not really specifically organising since the, a couple of years after the Iraq War broke out. We had a very strong movement here against the Iraq War, and that continued for a couple of years, focusing on issues of war, terrorism, you know, state terrorism, racism and repression that were associated with the war. But there hadn't been a specific anti-war group functioning for some years. So we sort of pulled together those previous anti-war kind of connections. Unions have been very strong on this locally. You know, it's ironic when you have a Labor government pushing it because, the local unions are pretty much Labor Party affiliated, but at the local level they are opposing it. And now they're starting to come out nationally too. You would have seen Michelle O'Neill made a speech saying the ACTU opposed it, which was great to hear. So, yeah, in terms of those social layers, I guess there's a sort of historical peace movement. There's a union movement, and then there's a sort of socialist and anarchist and other sort of political movements. And then we've got community opposition sort of as well. I mean, they're all sort of blended, but they're some of the different elements in the campaign. The Electrical Trades Union... Oh, sorry, yes.
No, keep going.
Well, the Electrical Trades Union have had a long-standing and very strong opposition to nuclear technology in Australia as the union representing electrical workers. And we had a public forum, again, this is about April last year, where we had local ETU official Scott Ludlam from former Green Senator and, again, I think it was myself. We all spoke at quite a well-attended forum at the Aboriginal Cultural Centre in town. We had a wonderful welcome to country there. And I think the Electoral Trades Union have come out again now nationally to start being more vocal about this. And I think they're an important part of it because they have such specific expertise and would be their members who would be servicing these boats.
Just a quick question, Alex, before we an extra question. Is the basis of the union opposition to these submarines, is it just limited to anti-nuclear and the base making, a submarine base in Port Kembla making Port Kembla a target, or is there a bit broader opposition to the actual war drive against China? There's so many different bases on which to oppose this whole thing, the war drive against China, the whole manufactured threat of China being some sort of military threat, which is a total, manufactured thing by the government, by both Liberal and Labor governments. And then also the actual spending of $368 billion on nuclear submarines, which means there'll be no money for anything else. So, yeah, just be good to get a little sense of the basis on which some of the different unions are opposing the deal.
Yeah, it's a little bit... I don't want to misrepresent anyone, but I'll do my best to what I know. And some of it, some of the unions have put out statements, so sometimes it might be a little bit blurred in my head, but I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. And I think we should definitely come back to that $368 billion that you mentioned, because I think that's really key to this whole question. But certainly locally, the unions have a strong anti-war stance as well as opposition to nuclear. Now, I know the Electrical Trades Union's public statements around this, I think they have mentioned and are concerned about the war drive, but they have a very strong view about what Australia should be doing in shipbuilding. There's a Shipbuilding Unions Alliance, which I think is them, the metal workers, and a couple of others, you know, that are involved, especially down in South Australia in the shipyards. And they basically advocate Australia should be building the diesel submarines that can defend Australia's shallow archipelagic waters around Indonesia, etc., not deep water boats. So they do have a more technical critique, but they're not completely opposed to building, you know, defence industry stuff. On the other hand, the MUA have definitely been very strong on the anti-war aspect of it. That's both at the local level and nationally. And certainly the Sydney branch as well. And, you know, there's strong statements from all those secretaries, Southern New South Wales, which is Port Kembla, Sydney, and then I think the National Union as well, all talking about the threat of war and all the war drive, you know, the idea that there's, as you say, this manufactured threat from China. I mean, I don't believe for a second that China is contemplating sort of military invasion of Australia. And, you know, the role of these submarines is clearly part of integrating Australia into the US's own aggressive defence posture in the Pacific and subjugating Australia even further to that end. Although I think the debate there is, public debate is pretty immature because Australia is already basically a completely integrated unit of the American war-making machine. Mm. You know, this idea that we're sort of, will we lose our sovereignty? I mean, what about Pine Gap? What about all the US installations all over Australia?
Yeah.
And the fact that Australia has loyally followed America into Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, Vietnam, just so many of these terrible, destructive wars.
Mm.
So, yeah, and local unions have been strong on both. I don't know how much, you know, I know you guys are down in Melbourne, but here in Port Kembla, there's a particular local history, and it's kind of a powerful... It's, I don't want to use the word myth because it's a true story, but it's become like a legend. Yeah, it's a legend, a local legend of the union movement.
Mm.
And the social movement's about the Dalfrim dispute. So back in the 1930s, you know, Australia had this very strange defence policy where the Lyons, the Prime Minister, Effington Lewis, the chairman of BHP, Bob Menzies, the Attorney General, had this wonderful idea that the way they would defend Australia against what was clearly the growing threat of Japanese militarism in the region was to sell war materials, pig iron, to Japan, use those profits to invest in the defence industry. I mean, it was a ludicrous claim. But they were supplying Japan with the iron that they were using to make bombs to drop on China, and then later they dropped them on Darwin and other places in northern Australia. So, you know, this was BHP and the Conservative government conspiring with the Japanese militarists during a time of rampant Japanese aggression in mainland China. And the local branch of the Waterside Workers Federation took a stand on that. They said that they wouldn't load pig iron on the Dalfrim, which was a tramp steamer bound for Kobe in Japan.
Mm.
Now, that walk-off from the Dalfrim ended up in a massive confrontation between the local unions and BHP and the state because basically there was a sort of bosses' strike. The union was happy to continue loading other ships. However, the local bosses decided it was time to put on a blue, and they threatened to impose what was called the transport, the license. They called it the dog license. So there was a license that maritime workers would have to work on ships. So the union refused to take out any licenses. The one person who took out a license was encouraged to turn it in, and they then had a burning of that license. And so there was a very long and repeated dispute over the export of war materials to an aggressive local, you know, regional military power. That was largely successful. In the end, the union basically loaded that ship after basically the entire town was at the point of starvation. But in the process, there was enormous solidarity, especially from Chinese workers in Australia who had their own union movement. There was a couple of Chinese unions, Chinese Seamen's Union and others, as well as Chinese businesses in Sydney and elsewhere around the region who supplied food and material aid to the workers in support of their stance against Japanese aggression in China. So that is a legend that, you know, has been retold through the history. Not many people alive now who are from those times, although I've been privileged to hear one of those young Chinese grocer, he was at the time working for a grocer who used to help load the food and bring it down here. A couple of years ago, there was an anniversary of that dispute, and he came and spoke at a few events. We have a local beautiful memorial to that dispute on the headland there. So, you know, there's a lot of rich kind of local history that we're sort of using to say, no, that's not what Wollongong's about. We're not a town of war and war making. You know, we stand against that.
Sorry to cut you off, Ari, but just very important to maintain that tradition. And of course he's passed on now, the absolutely iconic figure of Fred Moore, who, you know, I've met on a number of occasions, old unionist, peace activist, solid, staunch militant, and other individuals like him.
Yeah, it was actually Fred's died just over a year ago. The anniversary of his death a few weeks ago. And that was a very, his funeral was attended by hundreds of people. He was a very important on so many struggles. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I guess maybe leading out of that story, refusal to load that ship. Like, what sort of actions have been going on in Wollongong against the proposed nuclear base, and what sort of campaigns have been going on in terms of building opposition to it?
Well, yes. So I've sort of outlined the ones we did last year, and then to be honest, there was a bit of a quiet period in the second part of last year because there was no movement. There was a new government elected, and we were all sort of waiting to find out. But recently, at the start of this year, there were certain signs that the union movement was seeing, for example, some defence people down at the harbour making measurements and doing surveys and things. And also we've got a major renewable energy investment planned for this region. So they're supposed to be putting in, I think, about $45 billion worth of offshore wind off Port Kembla. One of the companies that was going to put that in mysteriously moved their proposal a bit further south down to Clamer, and it wasn't clear why. There's a few different things that were getting the unions very concerned that Port Kembla might be firming up. And then a few weeks ago we saw this announcement, it's not an announcement. It was an article in the ABC basically citing, you know, defence sources. So defence leaking military secrets, you would have thought would be something, you know, under other circumstances they would be severely prosecuted for, but there has been no mention that they were doing anything wrong by leaking it. But anyway, leaking the idea that Port Kembla was firming up as the proposed location. So look, we've definitely redoubled our organising efforts. We've activated the network we built last year. We have a protest coming up next week on Tuesday down at the Novotel where there's a defence industry conference. And we're just going to be standing out the front letting them know we don't want a defence industry here. We want, you know, we want the renewable energy. The unions, I guess the other really big concern for them is this $45 billion worth of investment could disappear if investors think the harbour might become a nuclear base. And if that would then, I mean, these are capitalists, right? So if it would threaten the ability to easily operate there, for example, security clearance zones and other things, they might decide it's better to invest elsewhere. So they're very nervous about that because there's very long-term sustainable job opportunities in renewable energy. They'll actually construct these giant turbines that to take out sea in the port. There's a lot of work there for, you know, Maritime Union and other union, you know, and these are good, you know, well-paid union jobs. And interestingly, the New South Wales ports have also come out pretty strongly. That's the state government against putting this there because they've said there's no room. They want to see Port Kembla become the second container terminal for New South Wales because Botany is predicted to get to its capacity. I think it's by about 2030. So the idea would be to build these turbines and then to use that once they're built and taken up to sea, to use that area as a container terminal. And so the port, the idea that the nuclear base might actually threaten that is very concerning, even for, you know, the state government. There's been a lot of opposition even at that level. Anyway, so we've got a plan of action coming up. We've got the protest on Tuesday at the Defence Industry Conference. Then the unions and the South Coast May Day Committee have called May Day March to be held in Port Kembla this year. That's never happened before. And we're expecting a good turnout. I think some of the unions in Sydney will come down and others. And we're going to be supporting that locally. We're having a community meeting on the 29th in Port Kembla to try and build awareness of what's going on, try and address people's questions and build that campaign. And we've had a lot of good coverage in the media. And then we're also doing things like stickers and T-shirts and trying to get messages out there that we don't want this thing. So I think we've got a good chance of pushing it away from Port Kembla. My concern is the US obviously wants some sort of, you know, submarine access to the east coast of Australia for their own boats.
Yeah.
So they may push it on to another community if we are successful. But for now, we've got to focus on, you know, stopping it. We're here and stopping it wherever we can.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if it does get pushed on, the first step is still stopping it the first time.
That's right, yeah. So Jervis Bay, just down the coast, is actually Commonwealth land. It's a funny little part of the ACT on the east coast of New South Wales. And that's also a military base down there. So that's an area that's been floated as a possible. But Jervis Bay have pushed away nuclear threats before. There was a plan to build a nuclear reactor down there. That was a subject of a very big local campaign some years ago, maybe in the 80s, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I guess if we have time, but I think the issue of the money is really important, right? Like, your thoughts on this too, Sue. And it seems that to me, you know, that the prospect of Australia actually getting nuclear submarines is pretty remote. There might be a few old secondhand clunkers from the US sold off to us supposedly in a long time in the future. I cannot understand how British submarines will ever be built. That seems completely nonsense. The practical difficulties of doing that are just monstrous, but it seems to me that this whole thing can be understood as a huge scam for stealing enormous quantities of Australian taxpayers' money and giving them to US defence contractors to deliver very little, but basically subsidise their defence industry base.
Well,
and so, yeah, go on.
Well, no, just go on. Even though Paul Keating is a total right winger, and wouldn't agree with him on very much at all. It was interesting. He did make a point which most of the other commentators haven't made. So he basically said, you know, in reference to that picture of, you know, Albanese, the British Prime Minister, and Biden on the warship, he said, "Oh, they're all smiling, but only one was paying, one dummy was paying, which is Australia." And that
That's actually right.
Hasn't really been picked up that much. That in a sense, what the US has done is they've done this actually out of the Iraq war. They've managed to outsource or offload some of the spending on the US military effort to other countries. But then, you know, we've seen this incoming Labor government crap on and on and on about the Morrison budget black hole and how they've got to carefully go through things. We can't, you know, go through the budget. We can't possibly afford everything. We've, you know, yes, if things we'd love to fund, but we can't really fund them, blah, 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 because of this budget black hole. But suddenly money's no object. It's quite scandalous. And I think since the announcement was made, and since actually Keating, in a sense, gave permission to more conservative people to come out against the deal, it's sort of people are suddenly starting to realise the implications of this, not to mention the fact that they're going to be looking around the country for some community they can bully into accepting a nuclear waste dump, most likely Northern Territory, most likely remote Aboriginal community. They'll look for the most powerless community. So I think people are suddenly starting to realise, even though this AUKUS thing's been around for a little while now, that people are suddenly starting to cotton on to what's involved in this. And I think if, and Dutton saying, cut NDIS funding to pay for it. So basically all of these pollies are going to look for things that they can justify cutting to pay for this massive military expenditure for a threat that's not a threat. If this goes through, there's going to be no money. There are going to be so many cuts to so many things, all over the place. So it's really important to block on so many different levels, the nuclear angle, the war-making angle, because working-class people don't win out of war, any war, and nuclear ships trundling through the Pacific, you know, nuclear waste, threat of nuclear accidents, you know, but also the spending. This is an absolute disaster. It's good to start to see the anti-war movement and unions and so forth coming back up. I'm actually also, you probably don't know, but I'm also a councillor on the local council of Merribeck, which is sort of inner north council in Melbourne. Yep. And I'm putting forward a motion against this, against the nuclear submarines, et cetera, and the war drive and so forth at a forthcoming council meeting. Don't know if it will get voted up, but anyway, we'll see. But the more we can get more motions from organisations with all different angles and the more protests, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. I think that's another angle we'll be trying to pursue is the council because there is some support there. It might be tricky, but we'll definitely try and get similar sort of motions, I think, as the campaign goes on. Unfortunately, the mayor of Wollongong, who has actually got a history of being quite supportive of the peace movement, has been completely hopeless on this. It's very disappointing to see someone who spoke against the Iraq war and all that is, you know, basically refusing to take a stand and being... Yeah. Anyway, we'll battle on.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on.
And good luck with the campaign.
Yeah.
And we'll try and
thank you.
We'll try and do our bit in Melbourne and Victoria as well.
I think we need a big national thing against this.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks. Have a good one.